All right, so I'm live. I was just live with Ryan. He probably just disconnected himself, so he'll be back. Just click that link, Ryan, and come back in. I think he might have exited the wrong window. It's his first official live stream hangout, so hopefully he comes back. Otherwise, I will disconnect and start again. So we're going to chat about some guitar stuff, some pedal stuff, a bit of everything, and we'll take some questions along the way. So this will be the first time that Ryan's been on one of these, which will be good. There he is. He's back.
Hey,
Hey.
I could hear you, and yeah, I don't know what happened.
That's all right. I thought you might have clicked the wrong window when you exited or something. That's all right.
Oh,
Cool,
you
cool.
know what's happened? It's because I've got multiple. There were like two windows popped up.
That's all right.
That's why.
So we are live now, by the way, so we're good
Oh,
to go.
cool.
Yeah,
Yeah,
we
great.
are. So we've got folks here already. We've got Henry, Eric, Don, Tom, Don again, Dylan. How you going? So we've got, let us know where you're from as well, guys. It's always cool.
Hey
And
guys.
we're gonna take some questions. We're also gonna have a chat about some guitars, maybe some recent acquisitions as well. So
Yeah.
we've got Buzz from Texas. Welcome. Modulated audio. It should be okay. I can hear Ryan okay. Is my mic dodgy, Ryan, or
It was going in and
does
out
it
a
sound all
bit,
right?
but it's fine. It's fine here. Sounds fine.
Okay. That's
Okay.
weird. All right. If it glitches, just let me know, man, and I'll try something else.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
All right. From Chicago, Oregon, Australia, Cleveland. Cool stuff.
Hi,
All right.
guys.
So this is Ryan, folks. We did a gig together the other night as well. So we play
Yeah.
out live and make a bit of noise, and he was absolutely cooking.
Oh, man, so are you, dude. Like,
Thanks, man. It was good fun. It was good fun
yeah, it
having
was
you in
great.
here. So just so you know, the way that my band kind of works is we usually have a someone who's much better a guitar player than me sit in with me, and then we just let him go. It's good fun.
That's not true.
That was good fun.
That was good. And the band was cooking as well. Like the rhythm session was great.
Definitely felt good. It definitely felt good. So this was someone says you got a lot of amp porn behind you there, Ryan. What do you
Amp
got?
horn, yeah. It's just all cardboard boxes.
Yeah. He's actually a painter, so he just paints cardboard boxes to look like amps.
Yeah,
That's
that's right.
what you do with your Klon as well, I think.
The clone, where is the clone?
Hang on a
It's
sec.
not.
Is that a guitar I've never seen? What is that black Telecaster?
This one.
Yeah.
It's I think you have seen this one. It's like I think it's the one of the oldest, because I buy and sell so many guitars. This one's kind of stuck with me for the longest time. It's a straight. It's a little bit of a strange one. So it's actually like a. It's called a Nevercaster, and what it is that it's a 60s like 60s custom, obviously double bound, but and a rosewood fretboard. But it's got a fat 51
Oh,
neck.
wow. Cool.
Yeah. So they made this. I don't know if it's a. I think it's a limited run. But yeah, fat neck. 60s sort of body, so they call it a Nevercaster. And I got it from one of my best friends. Like I was playing guitar for his band, and he had got it and then sold it to me at a really stupid price. And then it became my touring guitar. And it's really bad because I never like taking guitars on planes, right? Like because I'm just so afraid. So this guitar had I just take it apart. So the body and the neck go into a backpack with me, and you know I just carry it on the plane.
Yeah, wow, cool.
Yeah, and then I get the gig, and
I've
I'm
done that before. I've done
oh
that with
yeah,
a, yeah, it's a, yeah, you feel better sometimes
oh yeah,
taking it
absolutely,
apart.
absolutely. And I think this guitar I've played more shows than any other guitar that I own. So yeah, and so currently it's got a Lindy Fralin rail sort of thing.
I was about to ask you what that was.
Yeah, it's great. So this guitar, I always swap pickups out. Like it's the pickups stay in there for like 6 months.
Yeah, it's a bit like me at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And this is it. I think it's the, I can't remember what this is called, but it's something blues, Linda Frelin blues something.
Okay, cool.
But it's a hot pickup, but great sounding guitar. And this is obviously like a humbucker, so no hum. It's got a Callahan bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, but otherwise everything else
is... Callahan bridges. Did you ever see the video I did with Rick? He swapped out his Callahan bridge he swapped the Fender one for a Callahan bridge. Did you ever hear that video or see that video?
No, I didn't see that video, but he and I have actually spoken at length about that. And
it clearly changed the sound of his guitar. Yeah. I was stunned at how different the tone was. It was so much darker with the once he swapped it. So
yeah.
Hmm.
This is a funny story. So that guitar was the first guitar that I had with. I put a Callahan bridge on.
Yes.
And what it does is that it sort of, I kind of feel like it makes your guitar a little bit bolder sounding. Like it maybe fattens everything up. So I did that on the Tele and then I did it on a Strat. And I think it did make it fatter.
And yeah, okay, cool.
I was hooked. I think I bought like 10 of them and then just swapped it all out. And then I had a chat with Rick and he had said, you know, he put it on his Norcaster and he lost the twang.
Yeah, it
and
did.
I went back, oh, wow, actually he's right. Like, you know, there isn't twang anymore. And I had put, so there's another guitar that I have, which is like a Norcaster as well, and had the Callahan, and I ripped it out, and I put the original Fender bridge, and straight away it's like that Tele tone. So this is a really good example as well. Like, so this is a Callahan, and balance this one. Whoa!
And this one is going to fit right in on YouTube. There's the thumbnail. A guy handling like three different guitars.
So, yeah, so this one's got the original bridge in it and this one's got a Callahan. So I do find with Callahan, it does make it fatter. So on really bright guitars like this Maple Neck, Ash Body Strat, it's great. And then something like with the Rosewood Strat, where it's fat enough, you know, I just keep the Fender on it. And
someone asked, do you prefer Rosewood fretboards over maple or
yes, I do. I tend to prefer rosewood, but at the same time,
for me visually, I like the maple. I gotta say, the maple looks cool too.
I think maple, you know, it's that Strat look, you know, I think, yeah, and that Tele as well, it's beautiful, but I like the feel of rosewood.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this might be blasphemy, but the Strat tone is a maple neck and maple fretboard Strat. Like, that's that quack. It's, you got to have one. You got to have a maple fretboard.
You'll get some detractors here, man, because a lot of people that watch YouTube videos don't believe in the tone wood thing. I'm almost one of those guys. Now, I know you've worked for, I won't say where, but you worked for a pretty prominent company in the US doing guitars, but that's an interesting question, because do those guys at the top of the building, you know, tier or whatever, are they right? What would their opinion be on that?
I think, yeah, definitely like tone woods.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example as well. Like, this is a different company, but a few years ago I was really lucky enough that should I say it? I'll say it. Maiden Guitars had. I was doing some videos for, you know, a bunch of different people, and Maiden Guitars were really nice enough to sort of offer to build me a custom shop guitar. Cool. And it's part of the whole experience where you go into the
electric or acoustic?
Acoustic.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, well, yeah. Obviously, I think it would make a huge difference on an acoustic guitar.
Yeah. Oh, well, so before my Maiden trip, like, I mean, I knew about, I thought I knew about tone woods until, you know, I went to the Maiden custom shop, and Andy Allen, he's just amazing at what he does. And we were sort of, he was showing me how he listens to wood, and he was just tapping them close to his ear. And I was sitting there, and I've seen some builders do that before.
Okay.
I've always gone,
I think on an acoustic, I mean, because there's no, it's a different instrument. I think it's going to make a huge difference to how it sustains and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think a lot of people are under the assumption on an electric guitar, you might get some sustain differences, obviously, but most of it is inherent on, you know, on the hardware itself and yeah, pickup height and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, after what I've seen online, I could definitely hear a difference with the acoustics more than anything else. I think that, you know, that you have to be more particular with an acoustic guitar because it's not the same sort of pickup system and all that kind of stuff either, you know.
So yeah,
it's definitely one thing.
I yeah, definitely. I think it is the sum of all parts. Like, you know, like there is, I've played quite a few, you know, vintage guitars, and I always like the sound of vintage guitars. It's you could argue that it's because, you know, the wood's, you know, drier. Or and have you ever played a you know, one of those baked guitars, like baked maple?
Yeah.
Man, like, if anyone who hasn't done that, please go out and grab one of those guitars and just play them. They're so resonant. Dr. Rick bought this bass, and it was Beck Maple, and I think a Beck Ash body, I think. Could be wrong. Hmm. But it's one of the most resonant, punchy guitars. So there is, and I'm sure there is a science to that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll leave that to the comments. We'll change topics because this is one of those topics that, you know, will make or break a YouTube channel in terms of trolling. So
Tone Wood Wars. Somebody's big
friend. I'll go over some of these questions here. We've got a whole lot of guys watching. So quick question. I'm restringing a guitar for the neighbor's son. It's fretting out between the first and fourth frets. I'm thinking the nut needs replacing. Thoughts? That's from the Wombat Says. Yeah, it could be that, especially down that low. It could be that the neck is also sort of bowed slightly. Yeah. And you're choking out. It could also mean that the frets are really low. Mm-hmm. On my 52 reissue Telecaster, which isn't here, somewhere else, I was having the same problem with the high E string. So the really thin one was fretting out, and the rest of them played fine. So I had the nut replaced, and it was good to go. Unless you might have more thoughts on this than me, Ryan. I'm not a tech by any means. So
yeah, I think look. There's a couple of things that you can do. Let me grab the guitar. So, like what Shane was talking about, right? So, how do you see if your neck is bowed? There's a couple of ways you can do this. You can sight down. So, grab the guitar and just sight down the neck. The other way is that you can use your string as a straight edge. So, hold the first fret and the last fret, and if you see, like a little, and if you tap, I'm looking at my strings, and I can see, you know, there's a little bit of give, and it's touching the frets. So that tells me that's, you know, there's a little bit of relief. If it's not, and it's actually touching, that could be up bow. There's a tool you can get, which is like it's called a straight edge. Let me see if I can grab mine. Okay, so there's two tools that you can get. So this is a straight edge, and this is a not straight edge. You can get this at StuMac.
I'm sure I've seen something like that in a horror movie before, man.
So, and it's great. Cool. But yeah, and if you put it on the fretboard, you can also see the relief, right? if you put it to a light source, you can sort of see the relief. If you really want to get really pedantic like I am,
this is a
gauge that you can buy from them. And this is the same thing. You just put it on your frets and it sort of tells you. But the bad thing about this is that if you've got low frets, you know, it kind of takes the reading out a little bit.
Is that the sort of thing you used on your the Gibson?
Yeah. So all these are the tools. Like I have them because, you know, like I used to do a lot of setups for myself and for friends and obviously for work. There are a couple things that you can try, but and on YouTube there's so many videos out there that you can check out to see. But usually string buzz, for me, I think it's either a low nut, like Shannon said, or it's a high fret, you know, somewhere. And unfortunately, this, you know, when you do have a high fret, somebody usually has to level the whole thing.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, excuse you.
Oh, sorry. It's my chair and my fart.
So I guess the people that have been watching our series that we did a while back probably don't know much about you. Like I did mention a couple of times that you've done tours and you've played some pretty good gigs. Maybe tell the folks a bit about sort of what you've done musically around the place.
Where do I start? So I've been playing, I've been playing for about 20 years now. And I think about 10 of those years professionally. And when I say professionally, I mean, it's served as my main source of income, but obviously, you know, I'll supplement, it with like teaching, but I mean playing was a big part for me. I worked in a couple of music stores as well, and I was lucky to work for like a big manufacturer as well. But I really wanted to play, so I left and I started playing more, and then I came to Australia to study music actually. At Monash, I did the jazz course. And one of the great things about doing like a music course is obviously the people you meet and how the networks you can get. And through that, I was able to play for, you know, a few artists that I love. And one of them is my best friend. His name is Charlie Lim. You check him out. He's a universal music artist. He's Fender endorsee. He's a Two Rock endorsee. I toured with him for a little bit and I played on his albums. Me and my wife got married and then we had a kid, and then I pretty much had to, you know, make the choice, like, do I keep touring? I stopped touring, stopped playing I didn't stop playing. I played locally in Melbourne, but I stopped touring for about 2 years. And then recently, in the last year or two, I've started to do a little bit more tours like we did. I played in this band called Soul Feet, where we were a house band for like Oktoberfest in Australia.
Yeah, wow, cool.
And we toured Australia, which was awesome because it's like, you know, massive stage and played to like 18,000 people.
So what amp do you take when you play to a room or venue that big? Do you not take an amp?
The cool thing about that gig was that I was able to ask for whatever I wanted.
Cool.
So I asked for a Super Reverb and I got it. So it's pretty much a Preview Bandit.
Super Reverb, did you say?
Yeah, Super Reverb. Yeah, cool. And actually the first year what I did was I brought a Kemper along. But the Kemper is awesome. But I'm a guy who's so used to tube amps that I was finding it a bit, you know, like it And anyone who's played, and I think you know this as well, like, you know, if you play a tube amp and you play the Kempler, it's like, it's pretty much there, but it's still lacking maybe, I would say, 10%, 10-15%. It's not quite there.
The only thing I noticed about it mostly was the fact that you don't have that wall of sound behind you. I mean, you can have... And I think that's a huge part of how the guitar sustain thing works as well. Absolutely. And I just also saw a bit of a joke, sarcastic joke in here from someone called Kay Heron. He says, and he plays at the jam. So that's Ken, I take it. That's funny. Ken. So welcome, Ken. That's cool.
Where's Ken? Oh, Ken. Ken Herring. You should get work, Ken.
Yeah. What's he doing? Pretty sturdy, man.
So Ken is one of the guys that we play with. He was at the recent videos that I did with Shane at Sky Music. Ken was the ugly bass
player. Oh, yeah, of course. There's another one of those going up tomorrow or the next day too.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, those videos came up great. And for those wondering, like, that was like the fastest session ever. Like, it was just, you just get the cameras out and Ryan doesn't have to do things twice. I should release, like, some days when I'm trying to film here and, man, just the outtakes, it just takes all, some days are better than others. So I guess that's how it is for everybody too. But
you're just perfectionist, that's why. I'm not. I'll just leave the mistakes in.
Yeah. I should probably do more of that. I don't know. No, I think, like, you know, one thing YouTube has done for me, which is probably a good thing, is if you – and, I mean, your playing is fantastic, so this is just a criticism more of myself, was, like, it makes you a tidier player. It's really made me go, oh, that solo is not good enough. Let's do it again. I know my timing's out. Let's try it again. So, for me, it's more about, like, meeting my own expectations. If I think it sounds okay, I put it out there. If it doesn't, I'll usually redo it. And actually, it's funny because I did, I remember what video I did. I know I shot a Strat versus the lipstick pickup guitar the other day. Mm. I shot the intro and I was like, sucks. Like, I can't listen to this back. So I put everything down. I tried it again the next day and I was like, done.
Yeah.
Got to be, I was just going to say, it's definitely made me a focus more on my timing and all that kind of stuff, you know, because it's like recording an album almost, those intro clips. Now I'm doing the rhythm parts, doing the lead parts, so it's kind of like you want to make it sound, you know, at least tidy enough.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, I think I've done videos, you know, for like stores and all that stuff, and it's very confronting when you do YouTube and you know it's going to be out there. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've gotten a lot better. Like, you know, I've done quite a few videos with you now and I've watched them. And the cool thing about it is when you watch yourself back, you see, you pick up stuff that you wouldn't otherwise, you know, because...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because when I'm playing, I'm not thinking about what I'm doing really. But when I watch myself back, I go, oh, wow. That sucks.
That's why I've always preached, like, you know, on YouTube and to friends, if you record something you do live, or that's why I take a camera or an audio recorder everywhere, man, almost every gig, because I feel like it's either better than you thought or not quite as good as you thought, you know, after the fact. And it's a really good learning curve, really good learning experience listening back to yourself play. So Braden McCona says, Shane, I recently picked up a teal stripe Bandit for only $60. Deal. I swapped out the stock Sheffield speaker for a Swamp Thing. I was absolutely blown away by the difference it made. Totally nuts. And that's another thing I've been talking about for years. Change the speaker before you change anything if you're not happy with the amp. I think that's almost like so many people overlook that. I mean, you get it probably here a few percentage difference by changing out the valves and or rebiasing the amp makes a bit of a difference too. But
absolutely,
if you were to put a Marshall on a single 10-inch cabinet and then put it up to on a quad box or a 4x12, you're going to hear a huge difference. It's the same thing when you change brands of speaker; you hear a massive difference. So that's good. $60, what a bargain!
And here's a good proof that that's great advice.
You need more Turok amps back then, man.
I have one of these lying around.
Is that a Creamback?
That's a Creamback.
Yep.
Yeah, and like Shane said, you know, I switch up speakers all the time. You know, I've got 4 or 5 speakers that I keep in storage that I like. If I'm not happy with my sound, or I think, because I don't know if you find this, Shane, like, but my taste in sound with sound changes all the time.
Yeah, I'm like that, especially with guitars. I go through these hot and cold spells with stuff. More than I do amps, for me, it's more about like, you know, you probably see me play the Tele a lot and then the PRS, and that's all I play. And then, you know, I took the 335 out a couple of times and I'm like really digging that now. So it's kind of like, I go in absolute phases with stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like, this is really bad, right? But I have this expensive pedal. When I got it, it wasn't that expensive. It was more than I had paid for any other pedal. it used to be my main pedal, my main drive pedal for 7 years. And now I can't find a spot for it on my pedal board.
What is it, the Klon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hot and cold on those things too, man. Like,
It's great. It actually is. It's really good because, you know, it's a great clean boost, and if you use it as a drive, it's got that amp sort of thing. But there are a lot of new pedals out there at the moment that, you know, do the same thing or do something better, like the Jan Rave, for example, is you know, my current favorite.
Yeah.
I can't go to a gig without a Jan Rave.
You gotta get a Marshall DSL, man.
I think I should. Your Tom of that night was killer, man.
Oh, thanks. It's funny because we played this really small venue where, like, we had to have the amps facing each other, so they're right beside our legs. So if we're standing straight on. The amps were kind of coming across the stage, and mine was probably blowing your ears out, and yours was facing me. So when you're standing right in front of your amp, I couldn't quite tell how the tone kind of was until you know, you sort of said something. Because, I mean, I thought it sounded good, but I wasn't really sure. But, yeah, it's such a plug-and-play amp, man. I'm really enjoying it. But that said, actually, on Sunday night, I took out the Blues Deluxe, and I haven't taken that out for 4 months, maybe longer. I haven't taken that out. And I took the Royal Flush and a delay pedal, and it was good. It was, I don't know, it sounded like a prettier sort of sound, you know? Like, the Marshall's just got all this grunt and attitude, where the Fender has this bloom and it's a very different, it almost sticks out of the mix less is what I took away from it, but it sounded maybe more traditional sort of bluesy in a way, but
I find I was talking to Dr. Rick about this. So I just got that Dr. Z amp, which you know, some of you would have seen when I bought that Gibson, and don't get me wrong, like, it's a great amp. But the other night when I played with Shane, you know, I took a Fender bass, like 6L6 sort of thing, and I was like, oh, my God, where were you? Where have you been? and it's because, you know, the EL84 thing, it's so much more brighter. And
yeah.
And the same thing with the Marshalls, you know, it's got that bright tone, and the 6L6 and 6V6, they're sort of fatter and sweeter. I mean, they're all great, you know, and you sounded great that night.
Oh, thanks, man. It was strange, you know, like I felt like some stuff was sounding all right and other stuff wasn't really going anywhere, but you get those. It's one of the, I wish we had recorded it. That would have been awesome, but. That's the sort of venue where, like, the stage is so small, you can't really put the camera anywhere, or you can't really put the... I probably could put a camera on a table or something.
Yeah.
Maybe next time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, it's a great little venue. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is tiny. But I think the sound is great, you know, for such a small space. You know, we did turn up.
I was about to say that's the loudest I've ever played in that group. See, for me personally, the reason I bought the PB Studio Pro 112 was for that venue, right? Because I knew like a smaller footprint amp with less output would be the way to go. But I knew you didn't have any of those amps.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, all right, bring the Marshall. Keep up volume wise.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it. Like it was awesome. And
your tone was fat as, man. That Les Paul sounds like nothing else.
Oh man, yeah.
Should we tell everybody what happened, or should we keep that for another story?
So let's keep it. Maybe we can do something, do like a video of it. But at the moment, it's getting the treatment.
Oh, there we go.
So I bought this from Shane. It's one of those.
Yeah, I forgot about that. The tone right, is it?
Tone right.
Yeah,
it's awesome. It really is awesome. I usually run, like, it's debatable, right? Like, maybe maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work.
I don't know. So for those who don't know what this is, right, this is, basically like a vibrational unit that you leave on your guitar for, you know, 4 or 5 days or however long you need to leave it on for. And it's essentially supposed to replicate, you know, the guitar being played a lot. I did a video on this on my acoustic guitar, and I had old strings, so I tried to make it as very fair as I could without changing strings and position and all that. And I kept the microphone in the same spot all week for that. This is like the longest video I ever did, but it's called Tone Right with I think it's spelled RITE on the end.
Yeah.
And everyone took something different away from that video. I don't know. If it works, it works.
Yeah, so I had one ages ago and mine broke, and you know, Shane was kind enough to give me his, and I believe in it. Like it's so hard to tell, you know, because like obviously there might be science and people might have done some research into it, but every guitar that I have, I'll put it on for a week, right? And it does the same thing, which is cool. Every time I get a new guitar, when I buy a new guitar, and I put it on after a week, like I swear that I can feel, you know, the guitar vibrate a little bit more.
You know how we need to test this? We need to give next time you buy a guitar, give it to your wife or bring it over here, and I might or might not use that tool on it. And then I want you to see if you can pick the difference.
Yeah. Oh, look, I think
I like what do you call that? It's like the placebo effect. I like this.
it totally might be that. And somebody just said snake oil. It might be that. But I don't know. It's worked for me. It's actually worked for me. And
cool. I remember you saying you used it on an acoustic and it saved its life.
Dude, yeah. There's a guitar that I had that I got in a trade, and I didn't like it at all. I was, you know, not bonding with it. And then I kind of had this on and I left it and I forgot about it. Like, it was just like it was sitting in the stand and I never picked the guitar up. And I think it was there for like 3 months or something.
Yeah, wow.
And one day I just picked it up and I just went, whoa, it just made everything so resonant.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Shane, I've got a phone call I have to quickly take.
Yeah, no worries, man.
Do you mind if I just sneak off?
Yeah, yeah, all good, all good.
Sorry, guys, I'll be right back.
I can mute you from here anyway, so. All right, let me just mute his mic. All right, so for me personally, I don't know how well that thing works. I think I'm going to call this this first episode, something like guitar voodoo. Because this is that subjective stuff that everyone seems to think something works for them, doesn't work for someone else. I don't know how I felt about that thing. All I knew was, for me personally, I don't know if I could tell a difference. So I'll explain the test I did. I had, you know, I marked with some like a texture or marker across the strings where to strum, and I measured like the frequency response over like 8 different strums, took the average and graphed it and all that kind of stuff. And on paper or at the end of the graph, it was slightly different, but I don't know if it was just the strings. You know, you just don't know with stuff like that. So, yeah, I, even on my review of that, Tone Right sent me that unit. I said to him, I'm not gonna tell people this thing works. I'm just going to do a very analytical test of it and see if people can, if it feels like to them it did anything or not. So leaving the mic in the same spot, all that kind of stuff. So it was, yeah, tone polish, absolutely. So, hey, it was just an interesting experiment, no doubt about it. They're the kind of things that, for me, I don't know, it's good to hear that it worked for somebody else. I mean, Brian and I don't get kickbacks from that crap. So it's just, yeah, I gave it to him. He wanted it. I said, mate, it's yours. Otherwise, it's going to sit in the box and that's the end of it. Hey, John, welcome, man. I just got here. It's muted because I'm at work. The comments are all about sex toys, so I'll come back later. Yeah, interesting topics today. So this is good because I don't think Ryan's not a YouTuber, right? Like he's been on my channel and he's done stuff for a few guitar companies, but I'm pretty sure he's completely unaware of a lot of the stuff that goes on in the guitar community in terms of the Tull Tonewood stuff. So, yeah, go easy on him, guys. Oh, I got you on mute, man. Hang on. You're back. There we go. I was just saying, I think you might be a little bit unaware of the some of the stuff that the crazy arguments people get in over Tonewood and all that sort of stuff. So.
Yeah, that's the thing about guitar players, isn't it? Like, it's a can of worms.
Yeah, man. I almost was going to do a video on the pros and cons of doing what I do. And, you know, some of the stuff you see and hear that just doesn't need to be, it doesn't need to be as grossly over-exaggerated as what we see it, you know, from the other side of the screen. So it's funny, like, it's an interesting community. On the most part, I'm lucky. Like, the guys that support the channel are fantastic. But there's some guys who literally just get the exact opposite end of the community, which are all the trolls and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
it's definitely crazy.
Yeah, look, like for me, I believe, right, at the end of the day, it should be about how the guitar makes you respond.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like if you like something, like just like we were talking about, maple necks and rosewood necks, fretboards. Mm-hmm. If something makes you play better because it inspires you, great. If you don't like it, that's cool too.
Yeah, totally.
And things like that, like, you know, the Tone Right, like does it really make a difference? Maybe not. But
yeah, that's pretty much what I was just saying before. It's good if some stuff will work for people, won't work for other people.
That's right.
I think it, you know, there's a lot of I think the problem also is with a lot of opinions is it doesn't come from a place of experience.
Yeah.
Generally, most people will be, oh, this is a piece of junk because of this reason. Well, have you actually played it? You know, someone asked earlier whether or not I'd played Harley Benton guitars, and I haven't yet, but I still plan on checking them out at some point. But I'm not going to call them junk because they're cheap. I want to actually pick them up and play it and see how I feel about it. I made that assumption when the Squire Classic Vibes first came out. A guy I know bought one. I was like, why didn't you just buy a Fender? You bought a Squire. I gave him the rant. Hmm. And then I picked one up. I was like, oh, man, these are actually really, really good. Yeah. So, yeah.
So on Facebook, I'm part of a group that sells, you know, I've actually joined a lot of these groups that like sell gear, and there was a dude that put up a Klon for sale, and he had put it up for I'll say quite a lot of money, like, you know, over $2,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And just, man, the amount of people that just slammed him for it was ridiculous. Like number one, it's, yes, it's ridiculous to pay $2,500, you know, the price of an amp or a guitar
yeah.
for a Klon. Like, yeah, that is ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, I'm sure like, you know, there are people who really want one. Like, so I didn't pay that much for it, obviously, but because I got it quite, you know, but I did pay well above you know
what the current ones are worth, yeah. As
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, but at the same time, I had one, you know, I had one on loan, and I knew there was a day that I was going to have to give mine back. I mean, my friend's back, and that one came up for sale, and I was like, at that point, it was like, oh man, that's a lot of money. I've never bought like a pedal that expensive, but I went, I played it, and it sounded so different to the one that I had on loan, but like a great sound, and it's still, you know, that sort of clone thing. And I bought it, and you know, after I bought it, I was like, oh, what an idiot. But at the same time, you know, that was my main pedal for 7 years. And every time I played it, I thought I sounded great, and it made me play better. It made me inspired. So was it worth the money? Yeah, absolutely. Is it worth, could I sell it for $2,500? Hey, look, if somebody wants to buy it for $2,500 and wants to buy that guy's pedal and has the money, like it's his money.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's the same debate with like, you know, 59 Les Pauls. Like, why are they worth the same as a small house?
yeah.
You know, they're just Les Pauls. But there is, it's the market, I guess, you know, and we can't do anything about it. Like, so just hating it is, or you know, slamming the guy for it. Like, you know, just, there's no point. I mean,
I was just laughing to myself because I thought maybe Alex might have offered him a trade for 11 other guitars. We got a friend who's always on the gear forums. And not that I'm on Facebook anymore. Unfortunately, that's the one thing I miss about not being on Facebook is that one of the things is the that gear forum. I used to love seeing him try to trade, you know, 6-7 guitars for one other guitar. It was awesome. Yeah. So we had a couple of really cool questions here. Bigfoot in Germany says that's the first Tonewood debate answer that makes any sense. If you feel inspired, it will make you play better. And that's what it comes down to in the end. Like, you got to remember, I might shoot videos, or Ryan might be on the channel shooting videos and stuff, but we play. Like, that's what we do. I was playing guitar live before I started a YouTube channel. I'm still doing it now. So as much as I love doing this, I'll be playing live in one capacity or another long after YouTube is no longer. Like, that's just how it's going to go. That inspiration's never going to go away. So, yeah, it's all about what makes you play better, or how you feel playing it. I think that's a really good comment. And Ken says, good call. So
yeah, that's definitely true. Like, and that's, you know, that's how, what I believe in. Like, you know, it's like politics, you know, or religion. Is there really is there a right or wrong answer? Who's to say? But at the end of the day, it's about you and yourself, you know. Like, if you feel it makes a difference in your playing, if you love it, great. If you don't, that's cool too.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So I just want to give a shout out to Ben Chan. He just used the super chat and donated $4.49. So I appreciate that, man. That's awesome. Have a great day. Hope you enjoyed the live stream. So we plan on probably doing a few of these coming up.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to be spur of the moment, or we'll schedule them in or something and do that. But thanks again, Ben. I appreciate that, mate. That's awesome.
Yeah. And thanks everyone for joining. Like, I just sent Shane a text because I was on YouTube watching videos, and I was like, hey, what are you doing? And that's why we decided to do this live stream.
I was out trying to find a new sub $20 top, and I mission complete. That's where I was.
Ah.
It's getting kind of cold now in the evenings and stuff. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we might schedule it. Oh, whenever works, we'll just do these. And
yeah,
we've got 70 people here. So if you're enjoying the chat, guys, give it a thumbs up, and conversely, if you're not, you can give the thumbs down. It all helps.
But we will find you.
Yeah, we will find you and we will track you down.
We'll track you down and we'll play Stairway to Heaven.
Back. Yeah. I'm going to just do Smoke on the Water. I'll just turn up at night. It's a rocking song, but yeah.
Or Russian disco.
Yeah, no one will know inside, that. Yeah, no inside, one will know what that is.
Inside
joke.
Maybe
one person in the chat. So Ken asked earlier too whether or not there were any other bass players in the chat too. Because I think that was his question. He said he posted another question, but if I missed it, feel free. I'm watching the chat. I've got the setup on screen here a bit better now. So
I don't know if bass players know how to use the computer though.
That's drummers.
Sorry, bass players. I'm taking it and aim it, Ken. And all you got.
Space Jazz says it's Sky Music Open Anzac Day. I tell you what, if it is, odds are we'll all be there. We go there so much just to play. We were in there for like three hours the other day, not filming or anything, just went in there with Rick, maybe longer. I think we were in there for like 4 hours almost that day with Rick. It was crazy.
Yeah, I think it was a whole day.
so bad.
But it's such a great store, you know. The guys are great. Like they don't really I wouldn't say they don't bother you, but you know, they let you do your thing is what I mean.
That's because you and Rick are like 6 foot plus, man. You're the tallest dudes I know.
Yeah, tallest Asian guys in the world. Us and Yao Ming.
Yeah, that's it. Just gradually steps down a little bit.
But yeah, no, it's a really cool store, and I'm sure there are like heaps of other like cool stores as well.
So Edge of Eternity says, any chance to review an RK fly rig? I don't know what that is, so I'm gonna look that up as we.
Is that the Richie Kotzen one?
Maybe? Oh yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is, mate. You know more stuff than me. So Ryan's a huge gear nerd, guys. So if you've got any questions, you can go for it. I'll show you this little cool trick here, man. We can keep talking while it does this, but let's see if this works. So I can share screens like this too.
Oh.
So there it is there.
Yeah, Rich Cotton.
Yeah, I don't know enough about this dude, you know. I've tested a couple of his older, I think he had some MXR pedals or Dunlop pedals years ago.
Yeah.
Actually, that board that my friend Carl had bought from your old shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had some of those, his old things on there. Yeah. It looks pretty cool. So it's Tech 21. I don't think they do Tech 21 at Sky, but if I can get my hands on one or whatever, maybe. Might be cool.
Yeah, I think Tech 21 makes great stuff. Like Richie Kotzen's one of my all-time favorite guitar players, and I think he's Ken as well. Ken loves Richie, and Richie's just phenomenal, man. Like he's got all these chops, but he's also got the jazz chops, and he's bluesy as hell. And then you hear him sing, and it's like,
he's a smartass.
God damn you! But yeah, Richie's great, and I think the whole idea of the fly rig is just to have everything on one small board where you can.
Yeah, I'm just going to adjust my blinds. I'm getting this weird thing of light coming through and blinding me. That's probably better.
Don't go towards the light.
There it is. It's on my right. It was right in my eyes before. So, all right. So Terry plays bass. Absolutely. There you go.
Cool. Sorry, Terry.
Great Vanzini, old bass guy here. There we go. Yeah. One thing I'd love to do, actually, is pick up a couple of different guitars with you, some Flying Vs and maybe some Thunderbirds, what are they called? What are the Gibson Firebirds? No, Firebirds. Yeah, that kind of stuff. I reckon those guitars are kind of underappreciated.
Yeah, I think I played, what was this? One of my favorite guitars belonged to a friend of mine, and it was a 70s Explorer.
Yeah.
Carina body. And it was, I don't know if I can pull like a Flying V off, the look of it off.
Yeah.
But, oh man, they look awesome.
That they They're great. I've actually had one. I had I had one. I think it was right before they started doing the studio guitars. It was a series of US-made Flying Vs and other guitars that weren't called studio, but they were called something else. And man, it was awesome. I've got a couple of photos of me playing it somewhere.
Yeah.
I just don't know exactly where those photos are, but I'm going to try and dig one up and so you can have a laugh at how small I look with. Yeah. I'm going to have to dig that up. It's not something I can probably just find straight away.
Yeah.
I got one video of me playing it as well, and it sounded awesome. Such a great guitar.
Yeah.
I didn't like about it back then. The Gibsons used to have this like really heavily textured neck, like it was kind of unfinished almost. They painted it or whatever, but you could feel all it was really sticky, and you could feel all the bumps in the wood.
Oh,
I never really liked that feel. That was part of the reason I got rid of it. That it looks ridiculous on a guy like my height, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean some of my all time favorite guitar players are Flying V players. Just
wicked. Sure. We should answer this question because Ken's posted
it. From it.
So, hi guys. I find that the tone in a guitar is as much in the neck as in the body, if not more. At least in my experience, on bass. Thoughts? What are your thoughts, Ken?
I think the thicker necks tend to give the guitar more sustain.
Yeah, and
that's just one thing I've noticed. It could just be a fluke of hardware sometimes, but I really think it does something to the overall vibe. I remember when I first picked up the 52 reissue Telecaster, how well it rang out. I could actually feel like it hit my hand on the neck. And that's the first time I've really felt that on guitars to that extent. And the second time, funnily enough, was that black Custom Shop Relic guitar. That was on a whole different, that whole thing rung out like nobody's business. So in terms of sustain, I think it probably helps. I got huge hands too for, you know, someone sub 6 foot. So,
you know what they say about.
So, yeah, no, you're right. So, for me, I like having a big neck anyway. But I would say, I've at least in the experience I've had playing guitars, most of the guitars with fatter necks feel like they might ring out more. But it could just be that particular guitar. So, I don't know. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. I always think it's the sum of all parts. And for example, I have a Les Paul Custom with a ebony fretboard, the one that we did, you know, one of the Guitar Mondays, and it's a whole lot brighter than, you know, my other Les Pauls. And I think it's because, you know, ebony being a more denser wood, you know, has a little bit more. Makes it a little bit more trebly. But it also could be the fact that, you know, there's a lot of hardware and, you know, it's a heavy guitar. I don't know. But I definitely think, you know, there's a cool video, actually, and it's Paul Reed Smith, and he's talking about tone woods. And, you know, he goes to say, if I can remember correctly, like he was talking about pairing different bodies and necks to each other. Like if he hits on a like a neck blank and it's got a high pitch, he might put that with a body that has like a low, sort of a low pitch. And I think and that makes sense to me because if you had two things that like a neck and a body that sounded really bright and you put them together, it'd probably be a really bright sounding guitar. And I have bright sounding guitars, and I have had really dark sounding, almost muddy guitars.
Yeah.
Which I tend not to keep.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And here's a question for you. Like, you know, that someone said, it looks like I'm getting a retina scan. Yeah. The it's always this afternoon sun that comes through this window here. That black Custom Shop Relic Tally, right? I really tried my best to replicate that vibe, getting, you know, pickups with the same output and all that kind of stuff and putting them in my 52, expecting it to sound kind of pretty much the same, and it didn't. There was just something else. Why do you think Fender Custom Shop is like, I've just noticed all at most, at least most of the 50 style guitars are so much lighter. Like, I reckon, I wonder if that has any impact on anything. Would the lighter guitars have more sustain, or it's just a fluke of all parts, like you said before.
Yeah, it's hard to really tell. I'm sure, you know, like the more experienced like builders would have an explanation for it. But I think, you know, I've picked up really light Les Pauls that don't sound great. And I've picked up really light Les Pauls that sound amazing. So a lot of times, you know, I think there's the argument I've heard so many times, the argument that, oh, if it's light, it's going to sound good. I don't quite agree with that. You know, like, I think play the guitar.
Yeah. That's what you tell everybody. Yeah. What's the best out of this and this? Go play it. Yeah. Which one do you like the best?
Exactly. Yeah. We did that video with the Casino and the Gibson, the one with the P90, the dog ear P90s, the Casino and the ES330. And you know, it was cool because when I read the comments, like a lot of people said, oh, they love the Casino and the Casino all day. And if you were in the room, you would be able to hear, well, okay.
So Ken, who's in the chat, or was, I think he might have just left. He was in the room when we were doing that too, and he can hear us all say the same thing at the end. You know, no comparison, like at least to our ear.
Yeah. So that the Gibson was a fluke, right? We took that guitar down. It was on the wall, and because originally, Shane, we did the Casino and a, what was it?
Yeah, Epiphone Dot, but unfortunately Dot, another camera view didn't work or something.
Yeah. So that was the original video that we wanted to do. We wanted to do a Casino and a Dot. And then we had done that video and we walked past the Gibson ES330 and we went, let's grab it and just, you know, do a quick video. So I play the Casino first and I did that. And then I pick up the Gibson and I play it. And as soon as I play it, as soon as I stop recording, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this sounds amazing. And I look over and I see Ken's face and he's gone like, and then he says, what is that? And then I think you said something as well. And I went, oh, okay.
Cool. I literally said to you, I think that's the best guitar I've ever heard.
Yeah. And I was like,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah. And I was like, I remember thinking, oh, okay, cool. It's not just me.
Yeah.
And you know, as the story goes, like I bought that guitar and I was not looking for a 330. So yeah, it's at the end of the day, all it comes down to is if usually guitars like that find you. I don't know if you believe this, but you pick up something and you don't mean to, and then it's great and you go, whoa, what is this? Like, and then it's, yeah, back again to that whole inspiration thing where it, yeah, I really love the sound of the guitar, the feel of the guitar. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt when I got that PRS SE. You know, I borrowed it with the intention just to give it back. And when I did the video of it, I was like, I took it back the next day and I was like, man, that guitar just ticked a lot of boxes for me. It felt great, sounded good. I was like, you know what? Pulling the trigger on it, and I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. You know, I've never been an advocate for PRS guitars. Like, if you look back over the course of the 12 years I've been on YouTube, never really spoken about them or even been that interested in them. I always felt like they were a bit of a hair metal guy's kind of guitar, just based on their visual. It's grown on me a lot. I think I said that to you last time we were in the shop. Like, some of them are a bit too sort of 80s looking for me, but then there's those other ones that just look fantastic, you know, and it's all subjective stuff. So it's whatever anyone likes too. Some people hate Gibson stuff. Some people hate Fender stuff, whatever. But for me, I've never really been, that was the first time where I was like, I think this guitar makes me play better. Like it feels really good. And you heard it firsthand. Like when I went between the tally and the PRS, there was no comparison almost in my playing. It felt like two different people were playing. At least that's why I went back. I mean, the buzz was killing me too, but I've put the Bardens back in that and I've tested it out live, and it's just great. As much ridicule as I'll get for swapping them out again online, it's my sound. It really works for what I'm doing. So
I remember when you put those pickups in your telly just to do something different. It sounded great then as well, but I guess it's there's no wrong or right. There's really no wrong or right. It's what you like and how it makes you play. And
That's it.
Yeah.
For me, especially recording in this room, I always have a lot of trouble with buzz. I mean, you've recorded in here too, so you know it can get a little bit, the single coil thing can get a little noisy. But it also seems to depend on the day. I don't know why, but some days it's fine. Other days in here is not great. But the Bardens just, they sound close enough for me to a regular single coil, but just again, because they're rail style pickups, you can throw like distortion on them or whatever, and they're going to not have any inherent issues with squeal or, you know, getting real, even more noisy, because overdrive pedals tend to enhance an already noisy room or whatever. So if I'm demoing a pedal here with single coil and it's already got buzz and I click a pedal on, it's going to get way worse. So it's just a practicality thing too. I think I'm hopefully sorted for a while now, so we'll see. I just can't handle it. I find the buzz distracting to the point I just can't turn it off in my head, man. It does my head in. I hate it.
I think this is way back in the early 2000s. I one of my favorite teletones, and I don't know if he's to me he's a great guitar player, but his name is Kyle Cook. He's the guitar player in Matchbox 20.
Okay.
And it's a band that I love, like great songs. And this was, you know, when was this? Like maybe 2001 or 2, I think. But I went to see them play live, and he had a telly, and I swear it was, you know, the best telly sound I've ever heard live. And then I did some research, and he was using Bardens.
Oh, wow.
And if you go and look at some of their live videos, you know, like there's some, like he'll do a rearrangement of some of the hits, and it's just him playing the telly. Man, it sounds so good. And you go, there you go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and obviously they're Danny Gatton pickups too. So
fire up
any number of his videos and you can check it. So.
Yeah. Danny Gatton is a beast.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
We should try again. Yeah, his chops were just crazy, like just different and unique and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's amazing, and he's inspired so many of the current, like Bonamassa is a massive fan. There's so many guys that I love today, like loved him and, you know, learned from him. Which is the cool thing about music, I guess, you know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And you find stuff through other people as well, which is what I like. I mean, I never knew who Danny Gatton was, you know, up until Rick was telling me about those pickups. He goes, look him up. I'm like, all right. It's like, wow.
There's another guy, like a telly guy, Ted Green. I don't know if you'd consider him more of a jazz guy, but look him up, man. Like, that dude is on another level.
What do you think? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, you said you go.
Oh, I was going to say, what do you think of John 5?
Yeah, I like John 5. Like, I think he was, before he was John 5, he was like a really in-demand session player. And he was, I can't remember what the other bands that he used to play for, but he used to play for these guys, and you do all these crazy technique stuff.
Yeah, he's a real chicken picker guy. Yeah, but he can shred too. It's pretty cool.
And I think, you know, when I speak to my friends about John 5, like, a lot of people give him shit for, you know, being John 5, but I guess that's the whole market thing, you know, like, he's created this persona for him.
Yeah, for himself, and he's and it really works. Really works with the Rob Zombie thing too. I mean, that's, those guys are all, you know, got the freak look happening and all that kind of stuff.
There's a story that somebody told me, I can't remember, about John 5 coming to do a guitar clinic, and he was like, and this one of my friends had to chaperone him, and he was, and he said that any chance that John had, he would practice. He always had a guitar, and, you know, if there was downtime, he'd practice. And I think he's actually said that before in interviews or on YouTube. Like, he's a real nut. Like, it's almost like he gets OCD about practicing.
Yeah, I think Stevie Ray was the same from what I remember. Like, he was just on a bus between venues. He'd be playing away in the bus. So, yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that about John 5, actually. Cool.
Yeah, he's and you can tell, like, you know, the guy plays, and it's, oh, man, it's you know, he's done a lot of work. A
few people, Space Joe says, what about Guthrie? Yeah, he's a monster.
Guthrie, yeah. So here's a I'm going to name drop, but I had a chance when I was younger to meet Guthrie, and I asked him, hey, Guthrie, who's the best guitar player in your opinion? And he said Ron Thau. Bumblefoot. And I had no idea who he was. And then there's a video of Ron Thau and Guthrie jamming at a NAMM, and it's just somebody with probably a phone filming the two of them. And you just watch it and you go, come on. And it really made me want to give up guitar, because these two guys just went from country to jazz to blues to everything. And they're having a real deep conversation in music with the guitar. And it's, yeah, look it up. It's Ron Thau, Guthrie, NAMM or something. And I think they've since done a second one, but Ron Thau's like it. Amazing. This dude is like a serious player. Yeah. Go check that out. Shane gone? Sorry, guys, I think we lost Shane. I don't know if I'm still on as well. I am still on. Okay, well, I'll take this time to read some Roy Buchanan. Yeah, absolutely, dude. Guthrie Trapp. Yeah, he's amazing. Are you back, Shane?
I am. My computer completely locked up. Like, it just... everything stopped. No blue screen of death. I'm on my. Oh, really? I made the mistake of using my Windows computer. That'll get the.
Oh, that's the
arguments going.
That's another.
I don't know what it is. For some reason, just I don't have a lot of trust in this computer that I built. It's reliable to a point, and then I'm like, it'll just do random stuff like that. And I like, for those who don't know anything about me, I'm actually a qualified Microsoft technician as well. So, yeah, I know how to fix stuff. I'm really good with all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, and I've pretty much hit the wall trying to get this thing to not do that exact thing. But it hasn't done it since I reformatted it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's still got some issues.
Yeah.
So sorry about that.
If you catch me smiling, it's because I'm reading the comments. Like, some of them are pretty funny. Some of them.
entertain us, damn it. That's awesome.
To a dance.
Yeah.
It's the Ryan show now. No, it's never the Ryan
show. I'll change the title coming up. Don't worry.
Yeah, let's see. Let's read some of the things.
I don't know how long we've been streaming for. How long's it been?
I don't know.
Before the crash. Oh, that's cool. Anyway, yeah, so I'm back. If it does it again, I'll probably just have to pull a pin on it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised actually it let me get back in, me being the host. So,
yeah,
it worked out all right.
I think I was sitting here going like, am I out? I think I'm out, and I'm trying to read my phone messages. It's like one of those, like the bloopers on the news channels.
Yeah, yeah, it's just... It locked up, and I was like, I could still hear for a moment, and I thought, oh, no, it'll be all right, and no, that was it. So someone said it could be faulty RAM. It could be. I've only got two sticks in there. I should probably pull them out and test each one individually. Oh, yeah, that's all the stuff that I enjoy doing so much anymore, but it probably needs to happen next. But, yeah, I should just use the – oh, I thought you froze for a second there. I was like, oh, no.
I'm just going to. Oh, I was just reading comments. I should, like, troll you and go.
Let us know if you've got any questions or whatever, guys. Let us know. Still got a few people here, which is cool. Feel free to ask. We might try and maybe next time we'll try a different time of the day as well. Yeah. Mix it up a bit. Make sure I know it's late in certain parts of the world.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, guys. That was my fault. So when you guys put in a new pickup or change any electronics, do you do it yourself or take it to somebody else? Shane, do you do your own stuff, do you, don't you?
Yeah. It just depends on how hard the job is. Like tallies and strats, I'll do myself. Guitars like a 335 where there's no easy way. It's a lot harder to do those guitars. I'm not even going to bother. I'll just take it somewhere someone can deal with it. I'm lucky in a way, like Brian's bailed me out of bad wiring jobs a few times. So, and he's only around the corner from where I live. So for me, like I'll give it a go, and if I butcher it, he can usually save the day. It's a mix. I'll generally do it myself now. I've wired up a few of my own pedals and that over the years now. So I managed to kind of get my skills up with the soldering iron. And if you ever want to improve your soldering skills, basically post a video on YouTube and everyone will tell you how to do it properly. It works. It's awesome.
They will. I do all my own electronics and setups. The only things that I won't touch is if I need to do like a refret. And that's only because I don't have the space to do it. I have done it before, and I used to do my own stuff. I've got the tools to do it, but it's about space for me. But electronics, definitely, like it's, I think the same thing with Shane. If it's really complicated, then I might take it to somebody. But usually, it's pretty simple, I guess.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong with like a tally or a strat. I mean. You can take the pickguard off a strat, see where the wires are going, take a photo of where the wires are going, and then just do one pickup at a time that way if you're not sure
how to
do
it. Yeah.
I wouldn't suggest if you're new to it, like pull all the pickups, desolder everything and then start again. That would be the worst way to do it. So I always do one pickup at a time. Same thing when I did my strat. I think the neck pickup first. The tally, sorry. I did the neck pickup first and then did the bridge pickup second, so... Yeah, I just hate trying to work on 335s. I think Hutch actually from BA says 335s.
Yeah.